Welcome to the KP Podcast, where we talk about the business of real estate. A podcast about leveraging opportunities, growing your business, and experiencing financial freedom. Here are your hosts, Keith Anderson and Peter Cambucos.
Welcome, everyone. This is Pete, and I'm here with Keith. We're coming to you from the KP Studios here at the Forum. So let's everyone welcome Keith back. So you guys remember he was gone for the last episode over with his beautiful new bride, enjoying your honeymoon, Keith. So welcome back. How was it?
It was much needed, fantastic, and absolutely incredible.
Where'd you guys go?
We ended up in Maui for 8 days and the Big Island for six. And we had never been to Hawaii before.
Very cool.
Yeah,
very cool.
So it was
Did you get stuck in any volcanoes or anything?
A couple of them. A couple of them. There's actually two or three or a big giant one on the Big Island. So it was cool. It was incredible to see. Being that we had never been there before, so it was interesting to see something completely different than what we know.
Did you get to touch any dolphins or, you know, sharks or something?
Well, knowing that Hawaii state law says that it's a $10,000 fine if you touch the sea life, no, we did not.
But did you touch it?
No, we did not. We saw a lot of stuff.
It's all right, dude. We got close. State of Hawaii is not listening to us right now.
Hey.
You can let your secrets out, bro.
No, we didn't touch anything. I'm terrified either way, so we're good. I'm not going out there.
Oh, what about sharks. Did you bring back any rocks? You know what? What's that? What's that? What's that? What do you call it?
The lava rock stuff?
No, what? It's where you get like bad luck if you bring the rocks back or whatever. You know what I'm talking about, from Hawaii?
A little bit of
sand? You're not supposed to take anything. You're not supposed to take anything.
Well, Hawaii state law also states.
All right. So Keith did not touch anything or take anything from Hawaii. I am just not, like the state officials to know. He looked and did not touch.
I am very not good. Liable for anything that is said or spoken of on this podcast.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's get into what we're going over today. So what are we looking at, Keith?
Man, we are looking at what is going on in this crazy market. I think it's important for us to all realize that we've been in this, I would say, shortage, if you will, for a little while now. And we're starting to get a lot of questions just coming into us and just continuing to be asked about what is going on. Why is this happening? I think that's the biggest thing, is it's so different than what we've seen in the last previous few years. Like, we've had a shortage, if you will, but nothing drastic enough to create chaos, if you will. But over the last few years, I'd probably say, and now we've hit kind of this weird chaotic, like, where it's not just big markets taking the hit. Now it's multiple markets across the entire country taking a very chaotic hit. And after talking to a few partners and people across the country, we're seeing it in the recent months hit them for the first time. And now we're starting to see it as kind of a national big time shortage.
Yeah. It's affecting the whole country. So everyone is, you know, an incredible shortage right now. Certainly here in Arizona, we've got record low inventory, and that's the case in other places around, but I think everybody's being affected by just very low inventory. And, you know, if you're not only in the industry or buyer or seller, you know, those houses are flying off the market. We've got everything's multiple bids over list price. And so, like Keith's saying, people are like, man, how did we get here? And sometimes, more importantly, how does this end?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy when you really start to focus in on that jump. And I think that's what got everybody off guard, was we're talking less than a year ago, we were excited about having multiple offers on a house. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's the easiest way to say what we were focusing on, because less than a year ago, I guess it would be about a year now, we're starting to come around that time where it started to start. Let's say summer of summer of last year, where we would have a property listed, you know, and we would sell it within the first week. And we were pumped because we had 2 to 5 offers on it. And we were like, okay, this is a good, we got a good listing. We priced it well. It worked out. And this is exactly what we wanted. And it's a hot market. That was our description of where we were coming to now, let's say this whole year.
They don't even make it to market.
They don't make it to market. Or better yet, we do list it, and the first day we have 15 offers sight unseen. Yep. And by the end of the weekend, we're dealing with 30 to 60 offers, mm-hmm. most of which people haven't seen it. They're throwing cash at it. We have appraisal waivers, ridiculous type, contingency removals where it completely removes all protection of your buyers, yeah. but it's needed to win in this market.
Yeah. So what we're going to go over with this stuff is to talk about, well, how did we get here real quick?
Yeah.
We'll kind of touch on, what started this? How did we get up to this point? Why are we seeing this now? And then what does that mean? Where are we going from it? So I guess that to briefly touch on, I think everybody out there for the most part remembers the housing crash in 2008. And so, we won't dive into the details of that. That's for another time in another podcast if we get to it. But everybody remembers the crash there. And that's what, 13 years ago now?
Yeah.
And, the thing to remember is that kind of triggered or started kind of where we are today. And so we had that bubble there, right? That where we saw this rampant speculation. We had the easy money. We had investors, and I'll air quote investors a lot of times, going out, people buying multiple homes, builders building as fast as they possibly could, record build rates. And we ended up with a lot of vacant houses. We ended up with a lot of just empty properties because of this speculation over building for where we were at the time. And that's what led to that crash, And so, and obviously there's a lot more to it. I'm oversimplifying right now for time's sake, but we had that crash and we had all this extra supply, right?
Yeah.
So over the next few years after that, that supply only took, it didn't take that long. It took several years, but it was over the next few years that a supply started to get absorbed back in the market. And we started to see things recover, later yeah. on, but 2011, 2012. But some of the side effects, I guess, from that, from the lingering effects,
people
are kind of what
hurt.
Led to us today. Yeah,
people were a little stunned. I think it was a little bit. They got kind of hit, and mm-hmm. some of those people were a little bit more reluctant to come back and start the processes again that they started. That still needs to continue. You can't have a halt. Like yeah. that's the biggest thing. And what some of those builders completely halted and completely stopped building. It's just like anything. You don't usually feel it right then. You usually feel it way down the road when you're trying to play catch up with what you stopped doing. And that's a little bit about what we're feeling. And just the market overall looks different now. People that are in it are a little bit different. The investors that are in it are a little different. There's a lot more dynamics to this market than there was then.
Very different.
And and then you have different processes going on. So
yeah, but yeah, and that's what you're talking about. Some of those lingering side effects, and you did have people that will go, well, we're not going to make that mistake again. And so you've got
so we're not going to do it at all.
We're not going to do it at all. So and that wasn't the right thing. But yeah, you touched on it. You had builders that dramatically slowed their building, or in some cases even stopped for upwards of a decade. And
yeah.
so we were underbuilding for a decade. And that was okay at the beginning and for part of it, but eventually that caught up because you know what didn't stop? Population growth.
People still had babies.
Yep. People were still coming into the country.
Yeah.
So immigration population continued to grow inside the country. People continued to get to, come of age and get older. But the building wasn't there. So as all that stuff got absorbed, we started eventually getting to the point where we're now seeing fewer and fewer houses because all of these other things kept moving, mm-hmm. but the housing stock wasn't keeping up. So that's kind of where we came from, if you will, that got us to some of the shortages that we have now. But it's just like you mentioned at the beginning, Keith, then you saw this kind of crazy thing
yeah.
go off here in the last, well, we've seen tight or low inventory for a few years
yeah.
now, but over this last year,
we've had what in the teens of inventory for the last probably 2 to 3 years, mm-hmm. around the 12 to 18,000 homes of inventory, which in our market is still significantly low. It's still a very hot seller's market. And that's why I was saying we still felt the pressure for the last 3 years, But it wasn't until this last year where we were just like, oh my goodness.
Yep. All of a sudden.
It amplified. It was like three times worse than we've ever
crazy.
Seen.
Crazy. Yeah.
And amongst a pandemic, and that's something to continually consider, is it didn't help anything that a lot of people weren't doing the same jobs. A lot of stuff was changing and the market shrunk as it was. So everything took longer in almost every single field. So it doesn't help that we don't have, we have a lumber shortage and we have all these other things that are like struggling to get. That didn't help builders build faster to keep up with the market demand at all.
Yeah. Then once they realize that, oh no, there's all this demand here and there's no houses, you know, they're starting to, or they have been, I guess, for the last year or two here, really ramping up that building. But like you said, you know, it's a little almost, that's nice, but this came years before that. And, you know, now everybody's in catch-up mode and we've definitely got a lot of catching up to do. So let's talk about some of these triggers that just kind of pushed us over the edge right there, like you're saying here in this last, you know, year especially. And really some of these started over the last few years. And that's why we said we've been seeing that shortage now for, you know, 3 years, 4 years, however long you want to look at it. And then really just accelerated over this last year. So we did see things, you know, like one of the things that we've touched on, I think, one of our first episodes here was the millennial generation, which is very important because everybody has always heard about the baby boomers coming and, you know, that huge group of people came through and, oh, they're going to retire and put their homes on the market. So we saw kind of two things happening with that. One that we've been seeing for several years is actually people staying in their home in that baby boom generation, not downsizing, not, you know, leaving and going somewhere else to the extent that a lot of people were expecting. In fact, you saw a lot of the people stay there. But the bigger factor is those millennials. Yep. They are the largest. Keith, you're the largest generation that we've ever seen. So bigger than the baby boomers, bigger than anything we've had before. So you've got kind of this huge group of people coming through, you know, the whole economic system. Yeah. And so now they're coming of age. And you know, when we look at that statistic of, you know, when they buy their home, late 20s, early 30s, whatever it is, that group is there now. The millennials are there. So you've got these folks that were living with parents or renting something or doing whatever, and now they're out there buying homes, right? So you've got this massive group of people that were not here before. They weren't buyers, and now they are. They're here.
And to touch even a little bit more on also what you just said was with the baby boomer generation not downsizing and not making that decision. A lot of the ones I've talked to, they're buying more second homes than we've probably ever seen them buy. So instead of downsizing, not only are they not downsizing, but they're also buying that second home somewhere else in the country, like Arizona, for instance. So instead of downsizing, their downsizing strategy is really the condo in Phoenix where they can come and stay half the year. And that's their feeling of taking a step back.
Yeah.
And they have an investment now. So now it's like there's a lot of moving parts there where before they would just take and get a smaller house and be comfortable.
Right.
And it's changing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then some of those were things they weren't expecting. And so here in Arizona, you know, for us, and this affects a lot of the other states where we're seeing, and COVID really exacerbated this, of people moving to those states.
Yeah.
So in addition to the population that you have growing in there, places like Arizona, Texas, Florida, you know, Nevada, Idaho, Boise. My goodness. Yep. And so all of a sudden you've got these big migrations of people moving from different parts of the country into certain markets. Now, obviously, like we said, you've got the overall theme in the whole country, but some of these, like in our market here in Arizona, just got even crazier because, you know, half of California feels like is moving here.
Yeah.
So they're descending on here. And obviously we've got other ones too, but they're the neighbor, they're the closest. But I mean, you've got so many people moving in from other states as well. And then another part that I think is sometimes gets overlooked is what we've never had in the past before is something that we started seeing a few years ago, which was things like hedge funds, insurance companies, big corporations big money coming in and buying thousands, you know, hundreds or in a lot of cases, thousands of rental units, single family rental
units. So we're talking the houses that people need the most of, the 3-bedroom, 2-bath.
Yep.
1500 square feet
price,
the normal houses that the starter family needs in this market. And they're gone because they buy them all for the rentals and they're pushing them that way. So that's really tough to overcome. So a couple things we just chatted about, just a couple triggers. We got a millennial buying and purchasing homes more than we've ever seen, right? This new coming market influx market, of people. Yep. We're seeing big money come to the market, right? And and buy houses like never before and continue to grow their portfolios and have all those investments there. And then another big one, let's touch on the interest rates.
Yeah, that's a big one.
This is huge because like anything, if demand grows dramatically over time and it's because of a few things that demand is growing, and a big one is interest rates. Right. We have never seen interest rates this low. Interest rates just did a pullback and they're still so historically low compared to my entire life, basically. We've never seen them this low ever. But like even in my lifespan, they've been 4, 5, 6 times higher than what it is right now. We're seeing sub 3 at times when people buy a house, sub 3.
Yeah. And so if you look at, like you said, what kind of put it into just the stratosphere and skyrocketed here over the last year, it was done when, you know, the reaction to COVID by the government, where, you know, we had people on lockdown. So then you did have remote work and you had people moving, and then they coupled that with the Fed lowering rates to zero, the Fed funds rates to zero, which affected mortgage rates, like you said, to all times lows. So now you've got people that can afford it. Anybody that was, you know, maybe we look at that millennial generation or whoever that maybe were on the fence. Yeah. Now with these interest rates down, all of a sudden they could afford those payments. They could afford the house. And so they were out there and now they're all flooding at that same time because they were trickling in before, and that's why we said we saw it over the last few years, but this just basically put a rocket booster on it, and the rates coming down like that just sent it into the stratosphere and just said, okay, now we've got anybody that was considering it, anybody that thought they couldn't move to another state, anybody that was on the fence about it, you drop those interest rates that low and it's like, boom, we're going.
And it's market knowledge, I think, as well. A lot more buyers in the millennial. And I think it ties into millennials buying more houses. They're starting to get taught a little differently than what the generation behind them did. For a long time, it was save 20%, take this big giant down payment, save for the first 10 years of your life until you can afford the house at the highest degree. Now, all of the marketing that's coming out right now is, hey, you don't even need a down payment. You don't need any money to buy the house basically at all. You'll get gifted. You got low interest rates. Your payments are going to be lower than rent. Like all of these things are being shouted from the rooftops over the last 3 to 5 years. And people are starting to figure out it's much easier to buy a house than what it has been in the past. And so why wouldn't you buy a house at that point? It doesn't make sense not to. So
their payment's cheaper than renting a lot of times. Yeah. I mean, in today's market with no money, they won't get an offer accepted, but you know,
And they're also, I think it's word of mouth a little bit too. They're talking to their neighbors that just bought their house last year and their house is worth $60,000 more this year. Like what the heck is that? You know, so that adds to that fire and feeds to the demand.
So a lot of people would hear some of the stuff that you just say, Keith, what you just said there, and maybe that gives them some reason for concern. They go, hey.
Concern. What do you mean? The market increasing by 60 grand in 8 months?
That sounds crazy. Yeah. There's no way that's sustainable, right? This is, I mean, what are you talking about? Everybody's coming and they're all getting loans and, you know, houses are going up. I mean, at this point, you know, the Phoenix market is, I think, appreciation rates, you know, number one in the country. It's approaching 20%.
Yeah.
You know, and no stopping in sight. And they're like, hey, this looks crazy. Yeah. This can't keep up, right?
So my question to you from that, because I actually just talked to someone this morning. Mm-hmm. I was texting back and forth with someone this morning and they were talking about how they pretty much had their house paid off. And I was talking to them about, hey, is it time to upside? Is it time to get something better or a second home like we just talked about, right? And I had that conversation and their response to me was, these prices are too high. Mm-hmm. It's crazy out there. I don't think we want to buy a house right now. We'd rather just wait a long time or wait until it goes down.
What are they waiting for?
Wait until it crashes is what they said verbatim. So like my thought is, okay, well, that's an interesting conversation, Pete, because they're not the only ones. This is not a one-time conversation.
Yep.
Who else is talking about it? And when you look out there, it's a lot of people. There's people still writing those offers, but they're extremely nervous to do so because in the back of their mind, they're thinking, crash, do I really want to go this far over appraisal? and have the market crash per se. And that's kind of the thought, is anytime it's uncomfortable, people look to think bubble, crash, market issues. And so
right.
Are we there? Are we seeing a crash in the next year? Are we going to see this in the next 6 months? Right now.
Yeah, we're definitely not seeing a crash this year. We can say that safely enough. So, but that's a good question. And that's what a lot of people think. And I think it's important to always point out, and I know we've talked about it before, is people will say that because, you know, a lot of times you're seeing these prices go up. And like you said, it can be scary. But the thing to always remember is price is not a trigger. Price doesn't cause the issue. It is a symptom of what is going on behind the scenes, or what is causing that. And that's what we need to look at. And, you know, like we've mentioned before, in order to have a crash, you've got to have something that someone's trying to sell and no one's there to buy. And if we look back, like we said at the beginning of the show here, to 2008, that's exactly what happened. Yeah. You had all these vacant homes, you had all this speculation, and it was okay as long as the demand was there. And the demand was very high. And so that kept going until it didn't. And then when the demand stopped, you had all these properties, you had all this building going on, you had all these vacant homes, and no one was there to
Within
buy them.
Within 6 months, the supply completely exploded.
Right, because they were there to dump.
They were still
them on
building.
The
contracts for those builders kept going.
Or they were already sitting vacant.
Yep.
Right. And so now everybody's trying to unload it. And so it's important to recognize that was the dynamic that time. And we don't have that here. It's the complete opposite. And so we have an incredibly low supply. We don't have all these vacant homes out there. They're either, like you said, you've got people in them.
They're
either
rented.
They're owning them or they're renting them. We don't have the vacant homes and the overbuilding and the oversupply. Because you got to remember, here in this environment, this is a supply issue. Yep. Our demand is not incredibly high. It is above average, but slightly above average. It's not like we've got this crazy high demand that's driving this. This is driven by the supply side, and the supply moves very slow because there's nothing sitting there.
They have to build it
to dump onto the market.
They gotta grow it. They gotta continue to grow the supply. And I think it's also influencing the rental market a little bit as well, because when a buyer gets discouraged because they can't buy, now they're going to sign another year long lease. Mm-hmm. And the people that own the rentals are happy because they just keep feeding them and keep filling them with people. And there's just not, there's nowhere to go. And so even the rental market is extremely competitive at times.
Extremely competitive and very expensive.
And, you know, it is crazy. And so you see some other dynamics, like Airbnbs and vacation rentals continue to buy the properties. So that also puts a crunch on a little bit of supply. Mm-hmm. And that's not hurting the housing market. That's hurting the hotel market and some of the other industries. So you have all these factors not playing into our housing market, but they're crushing everything else outside it.
Yeah, but that's it. And that's a good point. But, like, let's touch on that Airbnb. Airbnb and the short-term rentals real quick of, you know, that's a concern. And I would say a legitimate concern for some people that go, hey, let's just say something happens in the economy and you've got all these people that have these short-term rentals.
Yeah.
Can't they just dump them on the market? Won't that crash it?
Well, the
answer is, yeah, they could dump them on the market, and I bet a lot of them will.
Yeah.
But again, if we're coming off of such record low inventory, and like you put out the numbers, if we're talking about our local market,
we're sitting 4,000.
4,000 something. And our normal market's, you know, 25,000. So even, like I say, if the supply triples or quadruples from here,
great, we'll be what we were last year.
Right.
Where we were still really
high. We're just coming off such a low number. You know, it's the same thing when we talk about the forbearance. Mm-hmm. Hey, are those going to come on? And is that going to cause an issue? It's like, yeah, we'll probably get some of those on there, but, you know, it's not,
they'll
it's a drop in the bucket. It's a drop in the bucket because we are coming off such an incredibly low supply number. So all that being said, are these prices going to keep going up?
Yes. I think it's pretty obvious that they're going to have to.
Yeah. Like we said, I mean, maybe they slow down. Maybe they don't go up as fast.
That's what I was going to say.
Maybe they level out.
I don't think they're going to continue. They can't continue at this rate appreciation.
Correct.
So we're seeing, hey, my prediction again in Gilbert early on was 20% appreciation in Gilbert.
Yeah.
20%.
I think you're gonna
hit it, man. And I might hit it. And that was my bold prediction. Like, you even said, you're like, Keith, I don't know about that one.
In fact,
that one was a little,
you might undershoot it by quite a bit.
Yeah. And so that's crazy to think. So my answer to that would be, yes, prices are going to go up, because as long as we have low supply and we have strong demand, they're going to continue to rise. It just happens.
For the foreseeable future. No one's got a crystal ball, and we don't know what's going to happen a year or two or three down the road. No. But for the foreseeable future, as far as we can tell, it doesn't seem to be anything stopping it.
Now, they might not go up 20% a year, right? And that's the thing to keep in mind. We may see it pull back, and we only go up 8% like normal in what we've seen the last few years. So that's the difference. So people were going to feel it. We're going to feel it. But the difference in feeling, it's going to be feel more normal to us over the last, because we've had it over the last 5-6 years, a more stable seller's market. And now it's kind of almost feels like an unstable seller's market with what it is right now.
Yeah. I mean, the extremes are not good for anybody. You want that to be more sustainable and keep going. And like you said, Keith, you know, it's going to keep going here because of some of those fundamental reasons that we're talking about. We're coming off some of that lower one, but I got a number here and I'm looking at this number here of some of these tailwinds, guys, of part of the reason why we're looking and saying this is going to keep going. Okay. When we talk about that millennial generation being the largest one, the average, so this is some stats that we've got here on first time home buyers and what we're looking at. Average age of a first time home buyer in the United States is between 32 and 33 years old. Okay. In 2021, this year, there was 4.5 million 33 year olds. By 2024, there's going to be 4.9 million 33-year-olds. So this is square in the middle of that millennial generation.
Yep.
And that number that's going to keep coming to market looking for housing is increasing over the next 3 years.
And my prediction would be the age at which they do so may also continue to decrease a little bit. They may get closer to that 30. So you're saying 32 to 33, but by 2024, it might be 30 as the average age. And that's going to add a significant number above that. And you're going to have to deal with that new dynamic as well. Because if people get more and more educated at an earlier and earlier age about buying a home, that's just going to add to it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, so it'll, you know, depending on what happens with rates, and obviously we'll keep an eye on those, will affect especially those first-time buyers. But yeah, man, I think you're right. I think that age will probably go down for those first-time home buyers too. So yeah, that might even put a little more pressure on it.
So I have a question for you, because this is, and I know a lot of people out here that are listening to our podcast, real estate agents and business owners and things like that. Mm-hmm. So there's two dynamic questions that I have, and I want to tackle both of these. So first off, what does this mean for the consumer? What should they be preparing for? What should they be thinking? Because again, a lot of fear in the market of, I shouldn't buy right now. I shouldn't do this. I know I need a new home, but I'm scared to buy. Right. And I think that something's going to happen. So what would be your advice, or what would you say they should be preparing for over the next couple years?
Yeah, I would say to consider some of the facts that we're pointing out, and don't get scared by some of these narratives that are out there. Because again, no one knows what's going to happen several years down the road. But when we're looking at facts and numbers, those don't lie. And they're telling us that, listen, this supply shortage is not going to spring back super quick. It's going to continue to be a slow grind. And what that means for consumers is it's going to keep being tough in a low supply environment, I would say, at least for the next couple of years here, you know. And so does that mean these house prices are going to keep going up at this level? You know, probably not. But I don't think they're going to be coming down. They're certainly not going to be crashing down, because you got a bunch of people looking for houses. Yep. You got a bunch of people looking for places
still
to live.
Still too much demand.
Yeah. So it's going to continue to be tough. There may be times where maybe it gets a little better, maybe it gets a little worse, but it's not going to drastically change, you know, barring some huge unknown catastrophic event. You know, I mean, if an asteroid comes down, well, then all bets are off. I don't know what to tell you.
That doesn't count. That's a void of Vegas bets here.
Right. But, you know, barring, you know, some unforeseen crazy things, I mean, this is going to be a slow grind up with the supply, the demographics that are in there, the people that are looking for houses. That's going to take a long time to get us back to a level market.
And so what we usually like to help people think a little bit about is, let's say you held off, all right, and in a year from now they kept growing and increasing in price, and let's say it did have a little pullback in price. Well, is there a chance that that pullback is going to probably be back to where we are right now in price? So in essence, you lost that year potentially by doing nothing, and you instead rented or did something else. And you're still seeing that exact same issue of you just lost the money either way. It doesn't make a difference.
Right. I mean, like those people that were saying a year ago or a year and a half,
yeah,
waiting for the crash. And here we are, 20, 25% higher. And that's a good point. So now, just to get back to where someone, say, a year and a half or 2 years ago who was waiting for the crash, well, now those prices have to come down, let's say 20, 25%, just to get back to where they were 2 years ago.
Which was still good, like was really, really right. High.
So it's like, let's just put that into perspective of what kind of price depreciation would have to happen just to get back to some of those levels that we were talking about a year or two ago. You know, that'd be a massive, massive crash.
It's extreme. So, and then here's the other one I want to, you know, unpackage and really dive into. So again, we have a lot of real estate agents that listen to the podcast and a lot of people that are in the real estate industry or affected by such. So What are the agents going to have to do? Because as team leaders, we help a lot of agents and we're coaching them and helping them grow and be competitive in this type of market, because it's a much different market than when I started, much different market than when you started 87 years ago. And so the key is here, is we want to be able to reinforce their thoughts and their minds as well and say, what do they need? So what's your advice for an agent? Let's package two. A new agent coming into this market that are ready to get in real estate and or maybe the agent that's been doing it for a couple of years, but it's different. You know, the veteran agents, they're going to keep doing their thing. They survive through a market like this, no problem at all. Mm-hmm. But new agents are feeling the heat.
Yeah, it's tough for new agents. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but this is a tough environment to get into for brand new agents, because it is so incredibly competitive, you know, with such low inventory. And so we're unfortunately seeing that, you know, turnover rate for brand new agents in the industry in general is a little higher than it's been, you know, in some of these years in the past. And that's because you're coming into an environment where you're fighting against, I don't want to say fighting against, you're competing against those veteran agents that maybe have some of those relationships, have more of that inventory, are tied into places that have more of that inventory. So you've got to go out there and try to get your piece of that, starting off brand new. So not only are you trying to learn this industry, but you've got a much smaller seller pool to work with if you're going that route, or your buyer pool, you're competing against so many things. So everything becomes just that much harder. And what's happening and what we're seeing with agents, of new or veteran, is it's drawing out the timelines. It's drawing out the pipeline. So whereas before, you know, people could work with so many clients and help them get into homes and help so many people, but now it's taking longer with everybody because they're having to, you know, write X number of offers to try to get something won. And they're trying to, you know, even find properties for them, or, you know, they can't get the listings because they're just not there. Yep. They're not available. So it's just much more competitive. And on the veteran side, you know, it really, this is where you see some of that stuff. And you know, we're glad and fortunate to have our team with it, where, you know, larger brokerages, larger teams are generating some of that inventory that, you know, some of those agents with those companies and those teams, they have access to that stuff.
They've got
stuff where they can work with each other and help each other. It makes life a little bit easier there. It's a little tougher, you know, if you don't have some of those relationships built or access to some of those things. It just makes it tougher in this environment.
So I would highly encourage, if you are a newer agent, if you are an agent kind of struggling in this type of market, get behind something. Get into a team-like atmosphere, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a real estate team. Get a coach to help encourage you and grow your skills to where you can be competitive in this market. If you're losing out on offer after offer, someone's got to win that offer, right? What are they doing to help win that offer each and every time? Because I know, for instance, with our team, we have consistently trained and helped teach new agents how to win those offers even at the very beginning stages. But I'd be terrified if I was a brand new agent coming to this market without coaching, without leadership and someone to kind of put that mold out there and show them what they need to do. So encourage you guys, if you're in that spot, find some help, find some training, get a coach, get some backing behind you and really help you grow in this competitive marketplace.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, Keith. And hopefully, guys, this, like I said, as we've been getting these questions more and more, hopefully today it helped answer some of these questions and give you some food for thought out there. You know, as always, anybody has any questions for us, reach out. Be happy to you know, answer that or chat. So reach out. Yep. And then
absolutely. And then guys, remember, follow us on Instagram, The KP Elite, and YouTube, The KP Elite. And also check out our website if you have any questions or want to connect with us in any way, www.thekpelite.com. We'd love to connect with all of you. And again, we have our question channel, which we've been getting a lot of questions from, at questions@kpeliteaz.com. So we'd love to hear from you guys. If you guys want to learn something on our next podcast, we'd love to dive in a topic of your choice. Reach out to us and we will go from there.
All right, everybody. Thank you guys. Appreciate you. We'll see you next time.
See you next week.